FM, W299 CD, Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordering the military to prepare to evacuate civilians from the southern Gaza city of Rafah ahead of an expected invasion. There has been harsh international criticism. ABC's James Longman is in Israel.
More than a million people have fled here to escape the fighting elsewhere. Rafah is Gaza's southernmost city along the border with Egypt. Its population is six times what it was at the start of the war. UNICEF says there are 600,000 children here.
Team Biden fighting renewed focus on the president's age, the 81-year-old candidate for re-election, attacking that special counsel report on classified documents that questions his mental fitness.
Sources tell us that the president is fuming over the special counsel's report, and the White House is now in damage control mode. They know that the president is legally cleared, but any political damage could last longer.
A manhunt in Tennessee for a 42-year-old suspect accused of shooting two deputies during a traffic stop, killing one of them. This is ABC News. Authorities in New York say an arrest has been made in connection to a shooting Thursday in Times Square. ABC's Aaron Katursky.
A 15-year-old who police called armed and dangerous has been caught after allegedly shooting a tourist in Times Square. Jesus Figueroa was apprehended in Yonkers less than 24 hours after police say he opened fire on officers and fled. The tourist struck in the leg, telling our station WABC,
"Dá um pouco de medo, né?
I leave Brazil, which is a dangerous place, to come here. Now I'm a little scared." The shooting follows the assault on police captured on body camera outside a migrant shelter in Times Square nearly 2 weeks ago.
Investigators in Southwest Florida are beginning their investigation into a private plane crash on Interstate 75 that killed at least two people. ABC aviation analyst John Nance.
One of the key elements they'll start off with is how much fuel was on the airplane when it started out and how much would it have burned. When you land a business jet, your power is up, and if you lose an engine or both engines, you're going to know about it immediately.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on. News from the center, WRCE, 1450 AM, 107.7 FM, your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Getting your biggest tax refund from Jackson Hewitt can lead to some spirited reactions.
Jackson Hewitt! Yeah!
Jackson Hewitt is so sure that you'll get your biggest refund that if they don't, you get your money back plus $100.
Jackson Hewitt! Yeah!
And Jackson Hewitt also guarantees the accuracy of your return for life. So don't just sit there. For your biggest refund guaranteed, walk into a Jackson Hewitt today and dance out Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A lot of Wisconsin farms are handed down from one generation to the next, but many new farmers start their operations from scratch. As Mike Moan reports, many of them benefit from leasing their farmland.
More than a third of Wisconsin farmland is leased, that according to federal data. Kelly Wolfert is a farm management outreach specialist with the University of Wisconsin Extension. She suggests renting land is the only real option for new and emerging farmers. That's because current market conditions put owning property out of reach, and these individuals also have to invest in things such as new equipment, creating even bigger disadvantages.
Land is very expensive when you're competing against farmers who have assets already built up that they can leverage in order to afford that land.
Her team is trying to educate smaller operations about the dynamics of leasing agricultural property and what their rights are. Wilford says it's important to make sure you have your lease in writing with clear terms. She adds that being more vocal about conservation practices you might deploy could help get a break on the cost of the rent. Steve Okanek, a regional educator with UW Extension, says lacking social connections in a farming community you're eyeing for production is another barrier.
Especially if you're a new person coming into a neighborhood, it can be very difficult. It comes down to networking.
He says you should treat your quest for land almost like a job search, where establishing trust and familiarity might result in more leads. This outreach comes as the nation sees an influx of beginner farmers trying to get a bigger share of the market. In the most recent census of agriculture, there was a 17% increase in the number of farmers with less than 5 years of experience. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Richland Center weather. I'm Corey Hartman for today. Becoming sunny by this afternoon. We'll see a high near 39. A few clouds move back in tonight with a low of 23. Gradually becoming sunny on your Sunday with high temps around 40. For Monday, sunshine 45. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 41. Currently 29 degrees.
From Hillsboro to Highland, your choice for news, talk, and sports is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
Okay. Join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and yes, indeed, I am your host for this hour and next hour as well here on our Saturday morning broadcast. I am honored. I'm delighted to have each and every one of you with me this morning as we once again pursue some of those most important issues, those news items, those factual developments in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. We're coming to you this morning live from the broadcast studios of WAUK The Shaw in downtown Waukesha, but we are broadcasting throughout the broadcast network of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin. Not only are we live this morning, but this broadcast is also repeated on Sunday mornings, the same time period, perhaps 24 hours dated, but nonetheless, hopefully topical and focused upon the issues that you want to hear about. And as always, this morning, we're taking your phone calls, your questions, your comments, your inquiries here on the broadcast. That number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We already have a couple of callers we're going to get to in this hour to engage with you on those important questions and inquiries on the syllabus, the academic approach of our day. And indeed, as always, we have an ambitious but achievable agenda for this hour and next, always asking, and hopefully always answering as well, three principal questions. What happened? What do we know about the facts of an event of this past week or weeks or even months? What happened? What are the facts? What are the things that we know for certain? And based upon those facts that we know, why are those things important? Why are they relevant? Why are they significant in understanding the world in which we live, our nation, our community, our neighborhood? And finally, in many instances, not all, but many instances, what do we do about those things? We never tell you how to react, how to respond to them. But if there are appropriate reactions to make, to pursue, actions to undertake on behalf of the things that you have identified in your lives, understanding why they're relevant, what kinds of things are available to you as options as citizens of our community, of our state, and of our nation? What can we do going forward to address those things, the good, the bad, and things in between, to make our world a better place for all of us as a part of a larger community? This morning, as always, we do have that very ambitious but achievable agenda, focusing upon some major news events and what a week it has been in the area of law and government and, yes, indeed, justice in America. We could not get through the day. In fact, the feature principally of this hour and next is going to be focusing upon those things happening in the courts, principally the federal courts, but not exclusively, the federal courts of our nation. We're going to be spending some time talking about this major oral argument before the United States Supreme Court just this past week, determining whether or not candidate Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, will remain on the ballot, the Republican primary ballot in the state of Colorado. You have heard all about that during the course of the last several weeks and even months. Major oral argument this past week. In a case that is important not only to Colorado, but plainly the rest of the nation, I would offer that as significant as that oral argument is, and yes, indeed, we're going to make the very easy prediction this morning, as we have in the past, about what the Supreme Court is going to be doing in respect to the challenge by Donald Trump to his removal from the Colorado ballot. I'm going to make that prediction again with almost absolute certainty about what the Supreme Court is going to be doing. In addition to that, however, we're going to talk about two other cases that are arguably even more important. One of them has to do with this immunity issue that's pending right now before the D.C. Court of Appeals. The D.C. Court of Appeals, finally, after about a month of deliberation and review of the merits of this challenge by the former president to the criminal prosecution against him, pending in the trial court in the District of Columbia, this challenge to that prosecution based upon his belief, his legal, his factual argument that he should be immune from any sort of criminal prosecution by virtue of the fact that he was once the president of the United States of America. Executive or presidential immunity decided finally this past week by the D.C. Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel. We'll talk about what those judges said in their sweeping order that made clear, as we have said before in this broadcast, how simple and how frivolous this argument is. They adopted basically that position and said there's no there there. And we're going to talk significantly about what's going to happen next. Something is going to happen on Monday in connection with a possible appeal of that decision. To where? Yes, indeed, to the United States Supreme Court. We're going to talk about the options that the Supreme Court has. There are three in number. Once Donald Trump predictably files his petition for a writ of certiorari this coming Monday, we're going to talk about what the Supreme Court has on its docket then. That's the second matter. And then we're going to also talk once again, as we have talked before, about this major case involving a gentleman named Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. It has flown wildly under the national radar, under the news headlines of America. But I would offer, as I often do, that this kind of case is among the three that is among those significant cases when it comes to the political environment in which we're presently living, having to do with whether or not a particular statute in the federal criminal code is the proper predicate, the proper basis for charging about 120, even more people who have been charged in the insurrection on January 6th, relevant to Mr. Fisher's case. We'll tell you more about the background of that, how a lower court basically sided with Mr. Fisher, an appeals court, the D.C. Court of Appeals, overturned that decision, now pending before the Supreme Court to decide whether or not the government, the United States Department of Justice, and the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia has properly invoked this statute to find that indeed Mr. Fisher's conviction should stand. Relevant why? Relevant because that statute is also the same one under which Jack Smith, the special counsel, has charged Donald Trump in his own discreet prosecution, also pending there in the District of Columbia, also related to the immunity issue. Lots going on there, lots to unpack there. And again, Fisher, we're going to spend some time chatting about why that among these three cases that are pending or may be pending soon, but the Supreme Court are going to animate a lot of what we're thinking about this coming year in this political environment. We're also going to be focusing throughout today's broadcast on this continuing notion of time. I believe that during 2024, as significant as the substance and the focus on the content of all these arguments and the political and legal machinations is, as important as all that is, the most significant theme we're going to be hearing about repeatedly is time. What is the timing by which decisions are made, juries return verdicts, cases are indicted, cases are postponed, and indeed the interweaving of that with the political environment and the political schedule that is just now underway as primary elections across the country get underway, including right here in Wisconsin in early April. We spent a lot of time talking about that relationship between timing, things in the courts, and things going on in the political campaign in 2024. Necessarily, we're going to also, as a part of that, be talking a bit today about Eileen Cannon. She is the federal district court judge, not in the District of Columbia, in Florida. She is the one who's presiding over one of the two federal criminal cases pending against Donald Trump. The one being prosecuted by Jack Smith in the District of Columbia, focusing upon the insurrection, the attempt to interfere with the 2020 election results. That is the one that's pending before the judge in the District of Columbia. Her name, Tanya Chutkan. It is her order that's right now being the subject of review by the D.C. Court of Appeals. Eileen Cannon presiding over the other case, also being prosecuted by Jack Smith. This one in Florida, in a district court, a trial court in Florida. This is the Mar-a-Lago documents case, alleging basically, again, in several counts against several defendants, not just Donald Trump, but others involved with him, not only in taking, but also retaining, using, bandying those documents about for public display. All those allegations now in front of a federal district court judge there, Eileen Cannon in Florida. She made some major decisions this past week that are going to have a major impact upon the future of that litigation pending. I'm going to talk about a decision she made in connection with some witnesses and the threats right now being bandied about, being hurled in the direction of witnesses who might be a part of that trial. The response by Jack Smith, the special counsel's office, and his objection to what she did in terms of failing, refusing to permit the production of information about those witnesses not to be disclosed in the public domain, not to be provided in the public domain. Why? To protect the integrity of the process, to ensure that those witnesses are indeed safe and secure. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about her history as well, even in connection with her past involvement with, yes, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. You remember well that she was the judge whose order in connection with the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago went up to the Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit, and sent back to her with strong instructions that she needs to dismiss this case, that she has no business engaged in the pre-prosecution, the pre-charging review and investigation of that case. She has now got the substantive prosecution in front of her, randomly assigned to her, probably once again going to go up to the 11th Circuit as Jack Smith, quite animated about what she did just this past week in connection with this witness issue. We'll talk all about that. And then finally today, a couple more things in the environment generally. One of them has to do, of course, with the report issued by another special counsel in connection with the documents involving the current president. His name, of course, is Joe Biden, releasing a report this past week that finds, not at all surprisingly, that there is no criminal intent. There was no intent at all, no willfulness, no purposefulness by the present president during the time when he was the vice president and resumed his federal service as the president. No intent in taking with him, holding, and perhaps even storing in his office in Washington, D.C., and also at his home in Delaware, documents that he should not have had. And so determining this past week in this major report from another special counsel that there will be no criminal prosecution, we'll talk about why that's entirely appropriate, given the absence of a willfulness element in this, but also the thing that's animating a lot of discussion in the day or so since the release of that report, that is this finding along the way, contrary, I will offer to you, to the fundamental notions of Department of Justice about what you comment about in connection with the witnesses and those kinds of things that animate the final decision. All of that, and much more this morning on our broadcast. I'm going to encourage you not only to call in, but also to engage with me even beyond the call-in show this morning in these important topics, because this morning, we are coming to you in the wake of these major issues in American jurisprudence having to do with all these cases and the campaign as well. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Supreme Court and all those cases, inviting your participation as well.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Less calories and fat, and oh so delicious. It's what every light bread wants to be. Leave it to the bakers of Village Hearth to have the perfect recipes that pack goodness and flavor into every package while still keeping it trim. With Village Hearth light bread and buns, you can lighten up on the calories and fat without losing out on the great taste. There's simply more to savor and nothing to sacrifice. With our light wheat, light 12 grain, and light Italian bread and buns, there's a light, tasty favorite for everyone in the family. Village Hearth, baking our best for you.
Valentine's Day is here. This year, give the ultimate gift. Name a star after your sweetheart. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For 45 years, we've named millions of stars for celebrities, dignitaries, and individuals worldwide. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can give the most memorable gift. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
We are continuing this morning our discussion of all things Supreme Court and more, beginning right now with this major oral argument that has been on top of the headlines, newspapers and media outlets throughout the nation focusing on this major issue. Again, I'm going to posit the notion that as important as this oral argument has been, it is predictably going to result in placing Donald Trump back on the ballot in Colorado. And that these other cases that are pending before the Supreme Court or shortly will be pending before the court are actually the more important ones. But let's take up that case, that oral argument pending in front of the Supreme Court just this past week. Where does this come from? We have spent a lot of time. You know it well now, right? This is the 14th Amendment, Section 3, that basically says that if you've taken an oath of office to serve the government and you subsequently engage in insurrection or rebellion against the same, you are not entitled to continued or renewed government service. That is my articulation of a much more appropriately constitutional language in the Constitution itself. That is the section that Colorado was recently wrestling with, including a lower court judge that had a trial on whether or not Donald Trump had, number one, engaged in insurrection on January 6th, and second, whether or not that particular language of the Constitution, Section 3, 14th Amendment, applies to him as the president. The lower court finding, as you may recall, that yes, indeed, there was an insurrection, that yes, indeed, Donald Trump took part in that insurrection and even was a major author and animator of it, but found in the end that because of the language of the section of the 14th Amendment that talked about officers, that Donald Trump was not an officer. He was a president, but not an officer, kind of a head scratcher for many of us out there. And indeed, the Colorado Supreme Court taking that up then, this is the state Supreme Court, found not only that Donald Trump had engaged in this insurrection, but that the 14th Amendment does apply to him and threw him off the Republican primary ballot coming up here on Super Tuesday. That's the case. That's the case that then went up upon Donald Trump's petition, a writ of certiorari, that is this request to the Supreme Court to hear the lower court. We know under the Constitution, that's one of the bases upon which you can get to the Supreme Court, which is if there is a decision of the highest court of a state, that in fact can be appealed to the United States Supreme Court. Indeed, they granted that request, that petition for writ of certiorari, and they heard that oral argument just this past week, a major argument. The upshot of it, the headline, which you have also seen, unmistakably, the Supreme Court is going to put Donald Trump back on the ballot in Colorado. We have predicted that before on this broadcast and other broadcasts of civic media. Not a surprise, given the merits of this case. Although I want to hasten to add this, that if you read the Colorado Supreme Court, again, a magnum opus, reviewing in great detail the trial court's decision, you will be compelled. And in a world perhaps of perfect facts and perfect justice and perfect legality, you would be convinced, I believe, that yes, there was an insurrection, that yes, indeed, the language of the 14th Amendment applies to this, and that the Colorado Supreme Court got it right on the pure merits of this. In that kind of perfect world, that order, that decision that I commend to you for reading is compelling reading. Regrettably, that decision, that assessment, if you will, by me, is not the one that's necessarily going to dictate how the Supreme Court resolves this. And indeed, it appeared that virtually all nine justices, in ways great and small, just this past week, during the course of this oral argument, were likely, presumably, almost certain to reject this challenge to Donald Trump's eligibility to serve on the ballot coming up here based upon the January 6th event. The Supreme Court, in several hours of discussion with the attorneys for the Colorado petitioners, these are the folks who petitioned initially to keep Donald Trump off the ballot, and the attorneys for Donald Trump, who are seeking to have him replaced, returned to that ballot, put back on that ballot, a huge amount of fascinating oral argument between the attorneys and the members of the Supreme Court. Some justices obviously seizing on different events. Interestingly, very little of this long discussion focusing upon the central issue that I suspect much of us would be focused upon, as is the order coming out of Colorado, which is whether or not this insurrection happened and whether Donald Trump participated in it. That particular issue, not really the subject of a lot of focus by the justices of the Supreme Court. That is the issue of insurrection itself. A little bit on that. We'll get to that from John Roberts, and also the former president's participation in that. But a lot of issues we've been calling off ramps, if you will, a lot of procedural issues, a lot of issues about the consequences of the Supreme Court keeping Donald Trump off that ballot. And indeed, in the end, my own sense, my tea leaves reading from that oral argument, that probably the majority of the Supreme Court will make the decision to put him back on that ballot just because of the concern about having this patchwork of states out there, some of which may indeed have Donald Trump on the ballot, some of which will not. That was articulated by more than a few of the justices as well. Some also seemed open to two other arguments. That is that the post-Civil War prohibition, which is in the 14th Amendment, that bars candidates from holding office, as we said, as opposed to running for it. And that those are two different things, holding office and running for it, the kind of argument that perhaps only lawyers can love. And that the president, as the lower court found in Colorado, the president is not among the officials to whom that provision specifically applies. John Roberts, the Chief Justice, I just mentioned him, asked a series of questions reflecting what seemed to be this emerging consensus, once again, probably coming out of an opinion fairly shortly, that the 14th Amendment was not meant to permit individual states like Colorado. We know that Maine is also arguing about this issue. Right now, the Maine decision on hold while this Colorado opinion is resolved. The 14th Amendment not meant to permit individual states to determine whether a candidate was ineligible. And again, not only based upon the inconsistencies then from state to state, but also this notion that there should be review by a federal authority and not a particular state. The whole point of the 14th Amendment was to restrict state power. And that's the question that John Roberts asked the attorneys, adding that the challenger's contrary argument was, as he said, a position that is at war with the whole thrust of the 14th Amendment. That is a justice who's plainly not buying into the position of the Colorado petitioners keeping Donald Trump off. Justice Roberts noted that the position that they were advancing would have empowered the former Confederate states to determine whether candidates were disqualified from holding federal office. He's going back to history, which again was the subject of a lot of the argument back and forth, including argument from Ketanji Brown Jackson and some of the lawyers as well. The 14th Amendment was adopted to constrain states' rights and empower the federal government, the Chief Justice says. And it would be, as he said, the last place that you look for authorization for the states, including the Confederate states, to enforce, implicitly authorized to enforce, the presidential election process. That, once again, from a Chief Justice, one of the nine votes that plainly is going to return Donald Trump to that ballot. Justice Elena Kagan also had some significant things to say. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Justice Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson and Brett Kavanaugh and all of the others just this past week.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordering the military to prepare to evacuate civilians from the southern Gaza city of Rafah ahead of an expected invasion. There has been harsh international criticism. ABC's James Longman is in Israel.
More than a million people have fled here to escape the fighting elsewhere. Rafah is Gaza's southernmost city along the border with Egypt. Its population is six times what it was at the start of the war. UNICEF says there are 600,000 children here.
Team Biden fighting renewed focus on the president's age. The 81-year-old candidate for re-election attacking that special counsel report on classified documents that questions his mental fitness.
Sources tell us that the president is fuming over the special counsel's report, and the White House is now in damage control mode. They know that the president is legally cleared, but any political damage could last longer.
A manhunt in Tennessee for a 42-year-old suspect accused of shooting two deputies during a traffic stop, killing one of them. This is ABC News.
The Bucks with a win at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports here at Super Bowl 58. In the NBA, the Bucks beat the Hornets 120-84. The Bucks' new guard, Patrick Beverley, entered the game at the end of the first quarter to a standing ovation. Beverley on what the past 24 hours like after being traded to Milwaukee from Philadelphia.
Man, it's been, you know, NBA world. Obviously, as a player, everything happened so fast, obviously. You know, my time with the Sixers was great. And I was playing some of my best basketball I think I've ever played. Yeah, I didn't see this coming.
NFL Jordan Love here in Vegas conducting interviews. I asked him how the Packers went from 2-5 to making the playoffs last year.
You know, it was a tough stretch we had. You know, we went on a 4-game losing streak, but you know, it's really a credit to the whole team, man. Everybody stuck together. No one pointed fingers. You know, everyone found ways to improve their game, and you know, that's kind of what I did too. Just found ways to settle in a little bit more, focus on what I need to focus on, and control what I control.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love from Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. I'm Mike Clemens.
Richland Center weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For today, becoming sunny by this afternoon. We'll see a high near 39. A few clouds move back in tonight with a low of 23. Gradually becoming sunny on your Sunday with high temps around 40. For Monday, sunshine 45. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 41.
It's 30 at our studios.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Todd Alba Show.
The immigration challenge in this country, as Jorge Ramos, the great author, likes to say, you can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep coming. For all of our faults, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here, and I believe that makes us stronger.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Outgoing Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. The way I joke about it is I'm probably not doing my job right if somebody's not ticked off at me most of the time.
The only way you can do it is if you have that steadfast commitment to doing justice. That tension's built into it, and that's quite frankly what makes the job just so phenomenal and exciting and fun.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weeknights at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM. Hey, 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 hey.
Related. including comments made by the justices of the Supreme Court in connection with this major oral argument before the court just this past week. Plainly, unmistakably, the Chief Justice John Roberts coming down on the side of the federal government, saying the states should not be able to direct a national election of this sort. He was joined by that view in the statements made by virtually every other justice who was also part of the questioning. Brett Kavanaugh reviewed what he said was the relevant history and concluded in his words that Congress has the authority here, not the states. He specifically said that the challenger's position that Mr. Trump may not be on the ballot, as he was describing it, was in tension with democratic principles, especially given the provision's indeterminate quality. Now, what does he mean by that? He went on to say this. He said, in trying to figure out what Section 3 means and the kind of extent of its exclusive language or vague language, what about the idea that we should think about democracy? Think about the right of the people to elect candidates of their choice, of letting the people decide, because your position, he said, has the effect of disenfranchising voters to a significant degree. He's directing that position statement, of course, to the people who want to keep Donald Trump off of the ballot in Colorado. Interestingly, the Chief Justice, Brett Kavanaugh, others, joined by others on the other side, if you will, of the political aisle, Justice Elena Kagan also expressing concern about granting individual states way too much power over, as we've described them, the national election. She said this. She said, I think that the question you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States of America. Again, scratching her head, she said, why should a single state have the ability to make this determination not only for their own citizens, but also for the rest of the nation? And yes, indeed, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the junior, the sophomore, the freshman member, if you will, of the Supreme Court, said she doubted that the drafters of Section 3 intended to create, as she called, disuniformity in this way, where we have elections pending and different states suddenly saying, you're eligible and you're not. And indeed, in connection with this general issue of insurrection, the Chief Justice went back to some of that issue and raised the concern about the definition of insurrection. Generally, said insurrection is a broad, broad term. And if there's some doubt about it, he said, I suppose that will go into the decision and then eventually would be deciding whether it was an insurrection when one president did something as opposed to when somebody else does something else. And what do we do? Do we wait until near the time of counting ballots and sort of go through which states are valid and which states aren't? He said that was a recipe for chaos. That language actually is somewhat troubling, somewhat reminiscent of what Donald Trump himself is saying on the campaign trail. Undeniably, however, a part of this overall voice coming from probably virtually all the members of the Supreme Court, it's going to return back and say to the folks from Colorado, no, you got to put Donald Trump back on the ballot. The Chief Justice saying for the Republican candidate, you're off the ballot. For the Democratic candidate, you're on the ballot. And it will come down to just a handful of states that are going to decide the presidential election. He said that's a pretty daunting consequence. My own sense, again, the sense of anybody who was listening to that oral argument, the Supreme Court is going to overturn the Colorado Supreme Court. Donald Trump is going to get a win, if you will, on this particular issue, not others coming up, but on this particular issue. Entirely possible along the way that the Supreme Court is going to come to a common judgment overturning what the Colorado Supreme Court has done, but maybe getting there in different ways. As I said, there are different off-ramps here, some procedural issues they could raise. And it may well be that we're going to get an opinion very soon in which all of them agree on the result, but come there in a different way. And so we're going to get what are called concurring, agreeing opinions. Everybody, or at least two or three of them, or maybe four or five of them writing together, but all of them in the end finding the Colorado decision needs to be overturned. Donald Trump goes back in the ballot. We don't know for certain, of course, until that day that the Supreme Court issues that opinion. This one can't wait. This one can't wait until May or June. Again, the theory of the entire year, the theory of our discussion this morning, tick-tock. Time is important. And this is one of those situations where the Supreme Court now has this case under advisement. It could issue its opinion any time now. Unlikely it's going to be Monday, but it should resolve this issue promptly, because once again, Super Tuesday coming up for Colorado and many other states in this nation. At that time, People in Colorado and frankly around the country need to know who's on the ballot and who isn't, including back in Maine, where again, the Secretary of State's position that he should get off the ballot was suspended by the Supreme Court in that state pending the result of the case Trump versus Anderson. That's the one coming out of the state of Colorado. We will see what the Supreme Court does. And as always, we appreciate so much perspectives, insights, questions from our wonderful, insightful, animated listeners. And we're going to get to those right now. Thank you so much for waiting as we get through this first major issue on our dock this morning. Susan from Brookfield. Susan, thanks so much for being with me this morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you with me, Susan.
I have a kind of, I'm a little off topic or perhaps a little bit late on my question, but I have recalled that shortly after the election, they had changed the rules in how they calculate the counting and everything for the ballots. I was looking to see if I could find out just what it was that they had done because I was unsuccessful at that. I thought you might have some recollection of that. The second thing about that is that we will be having a Democrat being the person who's in charge of counting the election for the next election. And I'm just wondering at this point, what else are they going to be able to try to pull? Because there are a lot of the things that they seem to have focused on, like the electors being illegal electors and stuff like that, that's kind of been cut off as an avenue for them getting their own way. And so I'm curious as to what people may think are the likely ways that they're, and I do believe that Trump is going to lose the electoral vote, but you know, we all know he's going to try to pull something. So
right.
I'm just interested. You might have any thoughts on the matter.
Absolutely. Susan, great thoughts and great speculation. That's what this year is all about, too. What's going to happen? We don't have a crystal ball. I certainly don't. I suspect your perspectives are even better than mine are. But yeah, a couple of things pulling out of that, plainly in the wake of the debacle, which was January 6th, restored again by not only Nancy Pelosi, but Mike Pence together. We recall them very well late in the night, still insisting on going back to count those ballots. In the wake of that, legislation did pass, and I think that's what you're making reference to ensure that some of the counting is clarified. So the next time around, those kinds of things in their minutia and in broad issues generally are not quite as confusing as they were before. More centrally, your other issue having to do what other options are out there. We do have two different players now coming up, presumably next January, when the electoral votes are counted. And they are plainly the present vice president. And her name is obviously our present vice president. And she is going to be counting those ballots on a regular basis during the course of that process with the present Speaker of the House of Representatives. And his name, of course, is Mike Johnson. And so the two of them, one Republican, one Democrat, they're in front of the entire Congress on that day. Well, then again, as they did before, open up those ballots, open up those electoral votes. Now, one of the issues, of course, is all sorts of constitutional provisions out there. But what happens if indeed neither one of them gets the necessary majority? And there you've got all kinds of constitutional provisions that have to do with the constitution of particular delegations from the states and how those are counted. That is an option. All sorts of things could, in fact, happen during the course of that proceeding. And again, creativity is not in low supply these days when it comes to machinations. But we will have plainly two different players. But again, a Republican and a Democrat. One would hope, Susan, to your good point, that there would be an understanding about the legitimacy of the voting process. But those kinds of things, we'll have to wait and see as January comes around. Lots of different things out there. You would like to think, in connection with your reference to the fake electors, we know now that there are at least three states, the attorneys general, at least three states have begun to prosecute those people who attempted to affect the kinds of things, the votes that were in front of Nancy Pelosi, in front of Mike Pence on that particular day. We'd like to think that that particular scheme will not work anymore, but one never knows. And that kind of initiative, if you will, to put in a positive sense, but really a dark initiative to attempt to to codify in ways that are not reflective of what the votes are out there. That's the kind of thing that has to be pushed back against. This is all about, Susan, I think it is in underlying your principal focus here. This is all about ensuring that the votes of America, the votes of citizens out there in all the states, including Wisconsin, are properly counted, that there is legitimacy to them. We know beyond that, the last comment I would make about this, even in the midst of some of the machinations, some of the invocations, Susan, that you talk about, we know in the end that the notion of voter fraud, that is the notion that people are voting illegally, improperly, that simply doesn't exist in America. And if anything, we're moving toward an even tighter system. And so the question is not so much what the numbers show. The question will be, are there attempts, as you indicated, Susan, to pull things, in your words, that are not consistent with what the voters want to do? And so we'll think about that and look at that as that plays out in the coming year, certainly as electoral votes begin to be amassed in the immediate aftermath of the November election, the electors, again, generally getting together in December following the general election. Susan, thank you so much for your comment and your inquiry about what other things might happen down the road here in our system. Also, we have on the line this morning, Adrian from Madison. Adrian, thanks for waiting. Thanks for your call, your comment, your question this morning.
Good morning. Now, it seems pretty clear to me that Trump is not really eligible to hold office again based on the 14th Amendment and his actions in fomenting a violent insurrection on January 6th. But it also seems clear that the justices don't want to be in the position of deciding the election there or having the courts really involved in deciding the election. They want the voters to decide the election. So they're looking for any way possible to avoid making a decision that, in essence, decides the election in this case. But the thing that I'd like to know and that drives me crazy, keeps me awake at night, is why couldn't the justices have taken that kind of hands-off approach in year 2000 and saved us the historical debacle of the W. Bush presidency?
Right. Bush versus Gore, 2000, exactly. That's what flashed into my mind, Adrian, as you were talking about this. At that time, a Supreme Court not at all afraid to not just wander in, but jump headfirst into the political environment of that particular time and basically directed that the counting in the state of Florida stop, right? We know in the wake of all of that, based upon history and the actual math there, that Al Gore won Florida by about 600 votes. It was razor thin, but he actually did win that state, should have gotten those electoral votes. But because of a decision, Bush versus Gore, interestingly, the Supreme Court in the course of its language in that case also says that this particular case has no precedential value. Nothing about this case should be used in the future, basically saying we're making this one decision and it has no compelling, lasting purpose down the road. But that's the kind of thing, again, the inconsistency some 24 years ago between what the Supreme Court did then and what it appears to be doing now. And there is this doctrine out there called the political questions doctrine. It sometimes invokes and says, you know what, we shouldn't be involved in the federal government with these kinds of political issues. They do that a lot in the gerrymandering area and other areas of life in our nation. Political questions doctrine sometimes gives them some cover. Here, once again, at a minimum, as you're indicating, Adrian, there seems to be some huge inconsistency. They're back in 2020 finding that indeed we can do nothing short of basically determining who the next president is going to be. Here, probably finding that Donald Trump remains on the ballot and, if not vacating the field, not addressing, as you said, Adrian, the fundamental question, which is insurrection, Donald Trump's participation in it, that they're coming nowhere near. And we'll see. We'll see what they do in the opinion coming out fairly soon. Also have on the line right now a number of other callers. I'm going to take them right after this coming break. But right now we're going to be going to a number of different issues having to do with this issue of eligibility on the ballot coming out of the Colorado case. We're also going to talk in the future comments here in our Saturday morning broadcast about this D.C. Circuit case, also much in the news. And then finally, Fisher versus the United States, all of that coming up along with you and callers more on our morning broadcast.
News from the center, WRCE.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
And we are discussing this morning all things Supreme Court, engaging in some wonderful discussion with callers. We've already spoken with Susan this morning, who raised concerns about what happens next when we have our Vice President Kamala Harris and our Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, counting the electoral votes, presumably next January. And that coming, of course, in the wake of the November election and the electors meeting. What other things can happen to the Constitution? Indeed, I pose the possibility that if neither of the major candidates gets a required number of electoral votes, goes back into the House, and the process there for counting by state delegations, that's an option. That's actually not an undermining of the process. That's the way the Constitution is set up. But Susan raising concerns about other things that we have seen in the past electoral process, the electoral cycle, that would suggest attempts to undermine the very counting, the voting process, legitimacy of those electoral votes, things we will continue to monitor as Kamala Harris and Mike Johnson coming up in about a less than a year from now are doing that all-important constitutional duty. Adrian talking about the inconsistency between what the Supreme Court appears to be doing now, that is not getting involved in undermining, upsetting in any way the course of the electoral process in connection with the Colorado ballot and what it did back in 2000, Bush versus Gore, effectively determining that voting should stop and the presidency granted to George Bush at that time. Great callers, great inquiries, great perspectives to share. More of that right now. We've got Kurt calling in. Kurt, glad to have you with me on this morning program.
Good morning. I apologize if someone already asked this question, but wasn't it Alito that asked, why should one state be allowed to determine?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Sam Alito, right, articulating what frankly, many other justices also articulated in ways more articulate and even less articulate, basically saying, why is it that Colorado basically dictates what happens to the entire nation, if you will? Because plainly, the Supreme Court undeniably says, unequivocally says, that Donald Trump can be off the ballot. We know that there are 25, maybe 30 other states out there, not just Maine, that are also looking at this same issue, and it could create this patchwork. And also, as Justice Kavanaugh said, Justice Sotomayor said, others said from the bench, this notion that this is a state question, a state question as opposed to a federal question. The Chief Justice, once again, going back to the time after the Civil War when it was a determination made by the federal government, not the state government, about who is and who is not an insurrectionist and who should and should not be in government. But it was Sam Alito, among the others that we articulated this morning, who share that concern. My guess is between this state focus and the concern about confusion, the chaos that the Chief Justice described, that's probably the basis upon which most of them, if not all of them, are going to put him back on the ballot. Great, great comment. Great observation, Kurt. Good, good. We also have with us this morning, Kristen. Kristen from Waukesha. Glad to have you with me again this morning as well.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
As aggravating as it was to listen to the oral arguments, I can almost understand how if they would say, you know, one state can kick someone off the ballot, then I can see other states ginning up reasons to kick other candidates off the ballot and we'd have chaos.
Right.
However, one of the things that really bothered me was the way they twisted themselves, I think, into pretzels, trying to figure out how they could claim that the president is not an officer of the United States.
Right.
I mean, I just find that to be so ridiculous. Everybody knows that when you're looking at, say, a corporate board of directors, the president is an officer of the board. Of course he is.
Right.
So my question is, if they actually come out, can they make this pronouncement without getting into that? And B, if they do somehow state the president is not an officer of the United States government, how many other places is that written and assumed? And might, you know, throw off a whole bunch of other laws and parts of the Constitution if the president suddenly is just an amorphous blob, I guess.
Right.
It's just ridiculous to me.
Happens to occupy the big White House down the street at 16th and Pennsylvania, right? But not really an officer, not really an office. And
come on.
Right? Absolutely.
Know.
And I agree with you. Again, it was a fascinating argument to listen to, right? But along the way, I agree with you. When it comes to that, I suspect that the justices just wanted to check off the box all the various arguments. And I hope, like you, that this was one of them. There was this amazing exchange between Justice Gorsuch and the attorneys about this very issue, going back and forth about what an office is and what an officer is. And again, the kind of thing that maybe, again, only lawyers, maybe Supreme Court justices enjoy doing. You would hope that that's not the premise for their ultimate argument. And maybe at most it gets a footnote in the final decision. I'm hoping that, again, it's a broader issue and that they not even raise that. Because as you just indicated, these things, what the Supreme Court says, you know this well, Kristen, what the Supreme Court does has an impact upon other matters. If they find that the presidency is not the president, is not an officer, all kinds of other things become implicated in that, not only in terms of responsibilities under the Constitution, but statutory authorities, all kinds of things out there. I suspect they know that. I'm hoping that Justice Gorsuch and the others were playing around with this issue, simply wanted to indicate, well, we've taken a look at that. And of course, courts can also say, we've looked at this. We're not deciding this today. But we are deciding it on this other issue. And you're right. Then they don't have to engage in the pretzel making that you just described and come up with a decision that has these implications far beyond Colorado and the national election coming up here. We're going to talk more about the national election and other things pending before the Supreme Court in this coming up, our second hour here in our Saturday morning broadcast. So appreciate all the good comments and questions from our callers. Do more of that in our second hour, and we will continue our discussion of all things justice, rule of law in America.
Ithaca's choice for news, talk, and sports. News from the center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM, 1077 FM, your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Keeping your vehicle running at its best is easy with GM certified service from Jones Chevrolet. From oil changes to tires to brakes and multi-point inspections, Jones Chevrolet has the expertise, technology, and convenient hours to take good care of your vehicle. For the very best GM certified service, make an appointment soon by calling 647-3788 or stopping at Jones Chevrolet, Highway 14 East, Richland Center, or visit joneschev.com.
Here's something important you need to know about McFarland's at 780 Carolina Street in Sauk City. From our power equipment, farm, parts, and service.
This is news from...